Well, now we continue with Chapter 29, Establishing Your Spiritual Integrity, of the 1955 Kahlua Study Series. I added two words in that title. It should be Establishing and Maintaining Your Spiritual Integrity. Before we begin, I wish to say that after this talk, we'll only have about 10 or 11 talks left, unless some of them are split for their length, their size. We're almost at the end of this series. I want to say what a joy it's been for me, and how very much I wish for all of you to have reached that place where you are making the contact. Because, as he will say in this chapter, by making that contact, receiving that spirit, that presence within, you are given the power to become the sons of God. In other words, you can be Christ, an open door for that presence to appear on earth. And so it's quite a mission that we have undertaken, and yet easily attained by all of us with the practice. Now, it may not come quickly, but it is easily attained in the sense that we now know what we have to do, we know what we were missing, we know probably where we have fell short. And so the instructions are clear, and that was my whole purpose for taking up this, attempting to teach what's in this book, or attempting to clarify it. So, he says, you who are hearing these talks, these tapes, or in this case reading this book, are no longer children in truth. Because you could not have come this far through the reading and hearing of this and remain children in truth. We are now receiving the meat of the message. You must remember, says Joel, what is being given to you is not being given to you by my will or by my wish. It is because of an inner urge compelling me to do that which I'm doing, and often voicing itself through me. Now that was the experience Joel had, that he was being impelled or urged or driven to do this from within. And when I read this book, I caught the same spirit, I guess, because it urged and compelled me to make these talks. And so it is the self-same spirit that wants this message to come through, that wants you to eat this meat, assimilate it, that wants you to make the transition, the translation that he's going to talk about in this chapter. In other words, you have been called by God. And that's not poetry, fancy words, something to fill up space in this talk. It is the truth. You have been called. The words that have been voiced through me have entered human consciousness, have been admitted to human thought, and they will never die. Truth may be legally outlawed, as it has been in times past, but that will not take from human consciousness the truth that has already been revealed. This truth has registered in your consciousness, and you could walk away from this now and never even look at another book, and you would know what you must do. You are no longer blissfully ignorant. You have been called. Christ has called you. And I mean that very seriously. So he begins with this principle. By virtue of having been born, we are under the law. We are under the law of cause and effect. Merely by virtue of having been born, we are subject to every human belief that exists anywhere on the earth. I didn't used to understand that, but I understand that quite well now. If you're living in the identity, the human identity that was born, then you're subject to every human belief that exists anywhere in the earth. You're subject to the law. But Christ has come to set at liberty the captives. That's us. And how does he set us at liberty? Well, by lifting us up and out of that human identity where we can live by grace. And so the Christ is calling you now. Will you come out from the walking dead and live by grace? I have called you by name. Thou art mine. Will you come? All right. In order to be free, we must live as that identity which was never born. And so this is our path to the transition, the translation, where we can live by spiritual identity, live by grace. The illumined walk without fear, by grace. At some period in our experience, we have tired of that continuous round of good and evil. I can remember the deep, dark night of the soul, several really, but one in particular, where I just knew there must be something more, there must be something better than this human life of good and evil and good and evil. And eventually I was given the art of meditation, and so we have turned to truth, to spiritual wisdom, and in that moment we began bringing ourselves out from under the law. From the very first turning of spirit, we're turning away from ritual, creed, and dogma and all that. And so, from the moment that we have turned to truth, we have been removing ourselves from the law and bringing ourselves under the grace of spirit. And you know, he wrote that in such a way that it wouldn't scare away the babes, wouldn't scare away those new to truth. They would think, yes, I want to come out from under the law and live by grace. But for those of us ready for the meat, he could have, and he does in this chapter, he could have said, from the moment that we turn to truth, we have been making the transition from a human being to our real spiritual identity. For a long, long while on this path, it becomes necessary that we consciously remember. So here's another. Whenever he says you have to consciously remember, it involves work. Because we want to drift. We want to enjoy our Saturday afternoon barbecue and watching a football game, or we want to enjoy our Sunday social get-together, visiting with our friends and playing some cards, or, you know, we want to just drift. Nuh-uh, not for us, not for us that have been called. There's plenty of internal work. People can look at us and think, oh, how lucky he is, how lucky you are, how lucky she is to have this spiritual consciousness. What a blessing. They don't understand the hours, weeks, months, years of labor, internal labor. They might look at us and see that we look somewhat peaceful. They don't know we are intensely active within. Yes, we have intensely active inner life. And so here's some more work where he says, it becomes necessary, we consciously remember for a long while on this path, we are removing ourselves from under the law and bringing ourselves under grace. And so he reminds us of that, those pages in The Infinite Way, where it begins with, on wakening in the morning, he says there isn't anything more important than those four or five pages in all of spiritual literature, and so he considers it pretty important that you make the contact first thing in the morning, doesn't he? I can tell you, in my life, I feel like I'm naked if I go out the door before I make this contact. I feel like anything can happen to me. I don't like it. It's very uncomfortable. So I have to make this contact first thing in the morning, in which I make that, I touch the hem of the robe of Christ consciousness within. And I know, as he says, God is on the field. I know that God is with me, directing me. And then I feel okay. I feel okay, but it wears off after a few hours. I have to make it again. So he's saying that you don't want to leave the house in the morning as a human being. Why? Because you're subject to the law. And so consciously take yourself out from under the law and place yourself under grace by making that contact first thing in the morning. There isn't anything more important than those four or five pages in all of spiritual literature, if they are carried out. Because once we acquire the habit, so what do we have here? We need to consciously remember. We need to carry those four or five pages out. And we need to acquire the habit. Now that's work. Once we acquire the habit of waking in the morning and instantly turning our thought to the realization that our dependence is upon the invisible, not the visible, that we do not live by bread alone or anything in the external, but that we live by grace, from that moment on, we are an expanding consciousness. Well, I like it better that from that moment on, we're living as the children of God. Whereas for a month we may read those very passages every single day and ponder them and meditate upon them, surely by the time the end of 1 month has come, we are no longer using that passage. By that time, thoughts of our own along that line have begun to come to us, and we start to expand from the statements. Once those pages become a formula, however, they have lost their value. Unless those pages act as seeds within us, seeds which break open and die so that we can forget every word that is on those pages. If those pages are fulfilling their mission, within a month, you will be able, every morning, on awakening, to turn within and receive from the Father some assurance of omnipresence, some assurance of grace. You will not have to repeat any kind of statements. You will, within a very short time, be able merely to turn within and let truth statements come to you. Now, that's assuming you're practicing your 12 times a day, which is where you learn to make the contact without using any words or thoughts. Then he is saying what's on those pages is still important, and that is the principle of making contact in the morning. But you won't be rehearsing, as a wave is one with the ocean, so am I one with God. As a sunbeam is one with the sun, so am I one with God. You won't be repeating any statements that you read in a book. By the time a month has passed, you will be making the contact within, and truth will flow to you from within. Now, it's a different experience than just thinking. It's very different. I'm going to see if I can explain it, but I don't know if I can. When you sit down and you're thinking statements of truth, well, we all know what it's like to sit down, close the eyes, and repeat or rehearse a statement of truth, don't we? And there's no power in it. It may serve to help us relax. That's why he says making a declaration or two when you first sit down to meditate is perfectly fine, because it may help you to remember what you're doing, which is, I'm not relying on any of these statements I'm knowing right now. I'm not relying on any of them. That's a good way to start a meditation. But you might say something like, okay, what am I doing here? All right, thy grace is my sufficiency. That's right. All I'm here for is to make the contact. Now, Father, you speak, or you flow, or fulfill thyself, or whatever. Now, those statements were fine for getting you to the place where you can be quiet, turn within, and wait. So the statements are sort of to get the mind to be quiet so you can wait for the real truth which flows from within. So if you're confronted with some discordant picture, it's perfectly fine to say, no, there's no answer to a mental image, and there's no God in that, so I drop it. Now, Father, I wait for your word, or something, that gets you in the listening attitude, the receptivity state of mind or state of being, that gets you to waiting upon God. All right? And sometimes you have to be kind of forceful because the particular problem, let's say someone comes to you that you love, there's a problem right there because you're emotionally involved, and they tell you a problem and ask you to pray for them. Well, sometimes you have to be quite forceful when you get ready and you close your eyes. You know, get out of my temple. I know who you are, a mental image, a dream of a person or a condition. Go away. I'll get back to you later. Right now, I'm here to hear the word of God, just to make that contact, so that God can reveal itself. I don't know how that's going to connect up with you. It's none of my business. Now let me be quiet. Father, you speak. Let your spirit be upon me. I await your voice. And that's all. Okay, all of that's perfectly fine. Make it as short as possible, which he's going to say in this chapter. I guess I'm summing up this chapter as an opening. Well, I'm summing it up and then we'll be done. Take 10 minutes. Anyway, all of that's fine. The point is that as soon as possible, you listen. And through that 12 times a day, over a month or two or three, you should be getting to the place where you can pretty quickly open that inner ear, as he says, or develop that intuitive listening attitude, that receptivity. Now, what happens when it's not you thinking thoughts, when the thoughts are given to you, or strike that, when truth is given to you, it's not you thinking a statement of truth, but truth comes into you, flows into your mind from within, from consciousness, there's a feeling that comes with it. The other day I received, this is a spiritual universe. Omnipresence is intact. Now, I've never read that anywhere. Omnipresence is intact. That wasn't a thought-up statement or a memorized statement of truth. That was flowing up from within as I listened. But it carries with this, and I don't know if I can explain this, which is what I started to say, it carries with it a quickening, a vibrating. Now, I don't mean anything physically. Get that out of your mind. You can't feel it physically. But there's an aliveness to it. Quickening is the best word there is that I've ever heard. That truth flows into you and you feel it. There's a presence with it. And you know that it's from the other source, not from the mind or stored up memory. And you know that you have received an impartation. And you know that that impartation you received is with power. In other words, you just had the realization of omnipresence and the fact that it is intact right now. All right? And usually with it comes a feeling of the presence for me. So I know what he means when he says, okay, we make the contact until we feel that God is on the field, and then the work is done. All right, so after working this for a month or two, he says, you should be able to receive from the Father some assurance of omnipresence, some assurance of grace. You will, within a very short time, be able to merely turn within and let truth statements come to you. And that's only if you've been practicing this other for 12 times a day. And I can tell you also that it is true, within a very short period of time, you'll be able to merely turn within and let truth come to you. However, it doesn't mean you can turn within. Now, this is my experience. It doesn't mean that I will be able to turn within, and within a minute or two, that will happen. There will be the assurance that God is on the field. It hasn't worked that way for me. Yes, it's true that within a short period of time, after practicing these 12 times a day and beginning to make the contact, we'll be able to do it at will almost. However, sometimes it still takes a half an hour to an hour because I'm struggling and wrestling with something I'm emotionally attached to. Something that, he says, you fear, hate, or love. Now, hate can be just as much hate if you hate this physical problem you're having, can it? It's still an attachment, and you can't hear that inner voice if you're attached. So, it still can take a while. Yes, I can do this almost every single time, but sometimes it takes, like he said, he had to get up and it took 4 hours. And sometimes it takes 5 minutes. So I want you to know that, so you don't think you're making very little progress if it still takes you sometimes 4 hours. That's where we're at. All right. Then you will find that if you have your conscious contact with God, that you will be told every single day, I am with you. Something that will be in the nature of an assurance that you are not walking through this life alone. And let me tell you, I can't live without that right there anymore. No more can I live without that. If you want to know who is Bill Skiles, we just read it. You will find, if you have your conscious contact with God, you will be told every single day, I am with you. And that you are not walking alone through this life. Now that's my whole life. That's my foundation, my inner being, that's who I am. I don't know if I'll ever grow to any other statue, but that's who I am. That right there is how I live. Okay. As you make your contact with the Christ mind, first in lesser degree, later in greater degree, that mind begins to function in your life, and then you'll understand the infinite invisible. Well, you won't understand it, but you'll experience it. Now, he talks about the problems that the disciples had after living for 3 years with the Master, and that was because his consciousness could make their full demonstration. Joel's about teaching you, us, anyone that'll listen, anyone that's ready to pay the price, and you know there's a price to pay, and you know what the price is, don't you? The hours, weeks, months, years that you put into this to make the contact, and then the sacrifices that come so that that presence can begin to live your life. But they don't feel like sacrifices at that point, trust me. They just don't, because you love this thing so much. All right, so he lived with them for 3 years, but Joel's all about teaching us that even if you've received a healing from him, even if you've meditated with him in the same room and felt a wowzer experience, you can't live on his consciousness. You have to go and do likewise. And so we have to find a way to make this contact. And if we can't find the way to make the contact in the infinite way, And maybe we can find it somewhere else. But we've got to find a way to make this contact. That's the whole point. And that's what Joel's all about, teaching us the necessity to do that. All right, the healings were just things that he did so that people could see, hey, this really is the truth. This really is the way. But his vision was much higher than that. His vision, as you know, was to have a circle of Christhood. And now we know what that means. A circle of folks just like you and I who make this contact several times a day so that Christ is living us. Now, I don't mean totally, because he himself says sometimes it takes him 4 hours to make the contact. Now, I don't think very often at this point, but in the early days it did. I think pretty much now he's in contact all the time. But you and I, we're at the place where we're seeing, hey, I can do this. This is something I can do. I can make this contact. And even if it takes a while before the first time it happens, I'm willing to pay the price until it does. And even if it means setting aside, getting up earlier in the morning or in the middle of the night, I'm willing to pay the price. I'm willing to do what it takes. And if there's an inner drive in you like there is for me, you have no choice. You know you have no choice. Who are you kidding? Like you have a choice. You have been called. It's going to happen. Now just do it. Stop fighting. All right. So, that's what he's all about. Helping us to be the sons of God on earth. And he himself said he's not about that. He's being urged and compelled. See, all of us are finding that our lives are already being compelled by something greater than ourselves, aren't they? This is a plan of God that we're enacting, which he set in motion some 2,000 years ago. All right. So what the disciples found was when it came to their own personal, private, individual lives, that is when they had to make the demonstration for themselves. And they failed. So much so that the master said, look, if I go not away, the Comforter will not come to you. The full revelation will not come to you. You see, all we are seeking is that Comforter. The very moment we have the realization within ourselves of the Comforter, we have no need anymore of religious teachers or leaders or books. We now are taught of God, fed of God, maintained and sustained by God. We can go off all by ourselves. The only thing we can't do is forget our debt of love and gratitude to everyone who helped us along the path until we achieved the realization of the Comforter. That we can never do. And this is so true. The man that introduced me to God, as you all know, was Don. And, like Jesus, I only knew him for 2.5 years. And yet he brought me right up to my very first experience of God, and it was a huge one. And I went to him and I told him how grateful I was and how much I loved him. Well, I don't think I told him then how much I loved him. I don't think I knew myself until later. However, I can never forget him. Ever. And whether I am able to peek into the invisible here and see him and commune with him, well, I've done that before. I don't mean that. But whether I'm able to see whatever face he has now, or whether I have to wait until I leave here, I am going to give him about the biggest hug you can. And thank him for what he has done. And so you can't. It never leaves your heart. And so whoever it is that helps you to make that contact, where you actually have the contact, you will never forget them. The gratitude is eternal. All right. Every one of us has a practitioner, a teacher, a somebody. and sometimes three and four somebodies back in our lives who have guided us through the difficult periods and who have given us true teaching, even at times when we couldn't accept it. And not one of them must ever disappear from our consciousness. Never must the love, the devotion, the loyalty, the gratitude disappear from us, even though in the outward world we have long since gone on our own way, and they have gone their way because they have helped us to make contact with our source. And now all of this, these two paragraphs, are true for me. I am living this. I have gone, well, they made the transition, so it's not like I could run over to their house. But because they took me by the hand until I had made this contact, you know, after I made the contact, it was only about 30 days later that Don left. How amazing is that? God's timing. And then really, it loses the face of Don and becomes the face of God, doesn't it? How wonderful, how beautiful God is to lead me right to His hand, to a consciousness of His presence, so that I can turn within, make that contact, almost at will, on a daily basis, and receive impartations. How wonderful is that? How beautiful is that? I can tell you, I did nothing to deserve it. But I can also tell you, I did the work. All right. Because if you say you love God whom you have not seen, but do not love your fellow man whom you have seen, you are a liar. And so all this is brought about so that you accept the responsibility that is placed upon your shoulders as students, students of God, students of Christ. Just as freedom, liberty entails serious responsibility, so does spiritual freedom. All right, we'll get into that for a minute. There was a point I wanted to make here. I said that I'm living these principles because it's true. I have gone off by myself, not by choice. I was forced this way. It was sort of the same thing. If I go not away, the full revelation of the Comforter won't come unto you. I didn't realize it at the time. Felt lonely for a while. But it forced me. It was actually such a blessing that you will never know. It forced me to make this contact, to go deep into it, to have the revelation that the Comforter is my own consciousness. And so now I can be here by myself, not reading a book, not listening to tapes or talks, not following any leaders, and I haven't had a teacher in dozens and dozens of years, and yet I continue to grow, to learn more, and new revelations come, deeper revelations, because I have the contact. But that doesn't make me special, and you all know that now. I'm no different than anyone. It's just that I put in the hours, the days, the weeks, and the months, and made this contact. And so the very same Comforter that's my consciousness is your consciousness. There's only one consciousness and one Comforter, that which I love from the bottom of my heart and soul, is also in you. And so Joel's whole point for this series of talks, and my whole point for talking about these series of talks, is so that you too may be introduced to the Comforter within you. But there's a responsibility for this experience. It doesn't mean that we are free to do anything we like, nor to ignore the laws of God or grace. On the contrary, it places a deep responsibility upon us not only to love our neighbor as ourself, no, much deeper, much further than that, even to be our brother's keeper. Now this you must know. No one can even help another except in proportion as they themselves have arrived. So you can't help anybody. You might as well quit trying until you yourself have made the contact. Let's see, I wanted to say something over here. I wrote in the margin before we pass this completely. Contact with Christ sets us free from thoughts and things of this world, including teachers, books, tapes, and so on. All right. No one can give spiritual help to anyone unless they themselves are spiritually endowed. And so the first rule of spiritual wisdom is to forget the world. If you haven't made the contact, you should not be trying to help, because until you do, you have nothing to give. Of course, we know that. Because if you haven't made the contact, you're a human being, which means you're a part of the dream. So what do you have to give except hypnosis? But if you have made the contact, then you're not helping anyway. Christ is, through you. So you might as well forget it. You're never going to be able to help. At best, you can be a witness as Christ helps through you. And that's a good thing. Otherwise, you'd think that you were responsible for this, and the next thing you know, you'd sit down to make your contact, and you couldn't make it. This way, it keeps you safe, so you know that unless you make the contact, nothing's happening. So you need to forget your fellow man and develop your own spiritual soul. Develop your own ability, your spiritual ability. Let the world alone. Concern yourself, first of all, with establishing your own spiritual integrity, your own spiritual identity. Be spiritually endowed, and then, automatically, you become your brother's keeper. Automatically, you begin to put into practice loving thy neighbor as thyself. Why? Because your spiritual endowment is like an atmosphere of God. It's like a rich perfume. It escapes from you without any conscious effort. Now, we talked about that before, sending you forth as candles in the darkness. You see, he just brings us back again and again and again to the real important step that we take is making this contact. It all springs from there. All right, so he talks about when he made the talks and the deep silence of my peace, and he talks about not knowing that that would go around the world. He says, your spiritual endowment blesses without any conscious effort on your part or mine. I've had that experience to a much lesser degree, in that something will flow out and I'll type it up, and the next thing I know, I hear that somebody in New Zealand has gotten help from it, or somebody in Mexico, or somebody in Australia, or somebody in Canada or Italy. So he says, did we dream in those mornings that this message was going to go all over the world? All we thought of was meeting there together to hear a little message of truth, and here all of a sudden it blossoms into all these different avenues by its own virtue, by its own presence or power, showing clearly that we were but instruments through which all this took place. Yes, as you become more adept at receiving these impartations, and sometimes they compel you to write them down, and as they are shared with others, not because you want to share, but somebody asks a question to you, and oh, there it is right there. You receive it as an impartation. You type it up, it goes out to them. All of a sudden, you discover it has a life of its own, because it's flowing from Christ, and Christ is alive. You don't push it or try to take it anyway. It's just flowing. It's going. It has wings of its own. So it is with you, he says. You have no idea what word you may speak to someone today, or what thought you may think today that will end up a passage going all around the world. You are thinking only of your own spiritual unfoldment, however. And then in some miraculous way, God will get it out of your mouth into somebody's ear, and the first thing you know, it will be repeated to you from the other end of the world. And you know, that may seem like a fabulous thing, and it is pretty neat, but it's nothing. It's nothing compared to making that contact within. I mean, it's interesting. You look at it and say, well, okay, so God's carried it down there into Brazil. Isn't that interesting? But it doesn't give you a whole bunch of fulfillment and make you feel special. No, fulfillment only comes from making that contact. I would trade that information and let all that be anonymous, that I never know how far it's gone around the world. I would trade all of that for maintaining this contact almost all of the time. We are just students of the Christ who are here for one purpose, and that is the perfecting of ourselves, bringing to our consciousness spiritual endowment, spiritual presence, spiritual power. What use God makes of it after it gets there is God's business. So, we are being helped. He says this, you are being helped in by your reading, your hearing, and associating together. You can only be perfected in it by what you do in the hours that you are alone. That is what counts. So again, he's bringing it home that you need those 12 periods a day. Never think for a moment that these messages come through just by sitting here in this chair and opening my mouth. They come through because of the hours and hours and weeks and months and years that have gone before. I think we all understand that now. You cannot live in the consciousness of a written book or a message that has come through spiritual unfoldment and not partake of the consciousness of the writer. That is what makes the words of Jesus so powerful, the consciousness of the one who brought them to our consciousness. And that's true. That's why when you meditate on a truth coming from Christ or through Christ Jesus, it has the power to transform you, to bring you to that state of receptivity. And that is why when reading some of this that has flowed through Joel, it also has the power to bring you to that state of receptivity. Because of the consciousness that uttered it, because of Christ. Okay, now he's going to bring us back on target here, because the point of this chapter is establishing and maintaining your contact, really. As long as you know that as a human being, you exist as a branch that is cut off and withereth, that's kind of important, don't you think? In other words, if you're living as a human being without making a contact, you're a branch that withereth, so anything can happen. You're under the law, all the laws, all the phony, fake laws of this universe you're under, because why? You're a phony, fake thing. God never made a human being, but that's another topic. As you begin to make your contact, and Christ begins to live through you, first in intuitive ideas and thoughts and feelings, and then more concretely flowing through his supply and companionship and healings, and then even more concretely speaking and walking through you, then you are no longer living under the law, you're living by grace. So he says, it becomes your function to say, I will not tolerate such a condition in my life, that of just living as a human being. I will maintain myself consciously one with the Christ of my inner being, knowing that Christ is the Son of God and is forever one with the Father. And that's what comes to all of us at some point. I am tired. God, there's another way, and I'm going to do it. So you will then awaken in the morning, and you'll say, please, Father, don't let me make the mistake of leaving this room until I have realized consciously thy presence. And then later, before leaving the home, Father, don't let me leave here under my own steam. Let me be sure that I'm connected up. Let me be sure I've made the contact with you. All right, this is what it's all about. 12 times a day with everything you're confronted with. So he says a dozen times throughout the day, remember, as a human being, I am cut off, but I don't want to be a human being. And so make your conscious union, your conscious contact. Keep at it, even though there may be periods of discord and inharmony in between. Just because you do consciously remember your oneness and you do make your contact, don't be discouraged if you find yourself in some prison or other along the way. It happened to Jesus on the cross. It happened to John in prison. It happened to John of Patmos. It happened to Paul. Don't for a minute be disturbed about problems that may come to you while you are on this path, because it is inevitable that some form of problem touch us at every step in order that we may remain awake and realize that good isn't just one of those natural things that always happens. It is something that comes only by virtue of our conscious union with God. And so these problems often prevent us from going off into just the belief, oh, I've arrived now. Now, that's probably pretty much common sense what he's telling us there. Because if you are beginning this practice, then you're still living as a human being 90% of the time, and you're only doing this 10%. But gradually you'll come more and more where you live under grace, until the day comes where you live totally under grace. But even at that point you won't be free of problems. The problems will not be yours, however. The problems will be those brought to you by others seeking the light. So I guess we better just dig in and get used to the fact that until we're living this way completely, we're going to have a problem once in a while. But we will meet it through making that contact. However, even when we attain our own freedom, then others will be knocking on our door, or calling us up, or writing us, or dropping us an email. I need help. Can you help me? So it seems to be the function of the Christ to dissolve problems, to dissolve the mental image. It seems to be the function of the Christ to melt the earth. And since you're going to practice this so that you become the sons of God, you can pretty much figure that you're going to be melting problems. And even after all of yours are met, then the world will be looking for help. So he says, the problems that come to your personal experience will lessen as you yourself take hold of yourself and remove yourself from under the law and bring yourself under grace. There is no doubt that they will not be such deep problems, nor will they be such lengthy problems. But the problems that come to you from the world will be the deeper ones. Gradually, you will have brought to you, well, what he's going to say here is gradually, you will have people bringing to you the sins of the world, the deaths of the world, the fatal diseases of the world, and then you'll begin to know what serious problems are really like. But you will not be meeting them as your own problems. You will be meeting them in a more impersonal way. And so you will deepen again your spiritual capacity, because with every victory, with every revelation of harmony, you yourself have been deepened in Christ. You yourself have attained a deeper awareness, a greater spiritual endowment. So this is kind of what you can look for. Hey, would you like to walk this path with me? You're going to have problems. And then when those are all solved, the world's going to bring you all their problems. Yeah, that sounds good. And yet it's just the natural thing. Christ isn't here just for you. All right, so now he goes away from that, and he goes into this story about the cat. And he's bringing it up to point out a certain principles. So he says, we do not use testimonies for testimony's sake, but there must be times when we are permitted to use a testimony for the purpose of illustrating a spiritual principle. And so he tells us a little bit about this letter he received, and he says, that is the experience that evidently came to this cat. The very fact that it snapped out of it and was in better health than before shows that the human belief was broken, and that the cat was now not living a human span, now it was living its spiritual existence. You know, I know he's told us this, that when we sit down as an Infinite Way practitioner, we are not really healing people. The change is not in a physical body. The change is in the consciousness. And so we are lifting them up to the consciousness that we attain, so that their Christhood may be revealed to them. And here he's pointing out, you can do the same thing with a plant or a cat. Plants and cats and dogs, they're not lower than humans. If there's one life permeating all, and there is, this I know, then that one life must be the same, no matter how it's appearing to the senses. And so you can set your cat free to live not in the human belief of a span, but you can set it free to live the same spiritual experience that you're going to be living. Isn't that interesting? Something to contemplate. Now see this point. Even though you are raised from the dead by spiritual power, you still can go back under the law if you yourself permit yourself to come under the influence of universal belief. Oh, he says, I wish you could see this point. Look! So, it's very important to him that you understand that you can have a spiritual experience by making that contact within, and it can be a wowzer. And by that I mean terminal cancer dissolved. You go back and they can't find anything on the x-rays, or permanently unemployable, turned around into harmony that's flowing like milk and honey, or totally unable to get along with any person in a personal relationship, in a close partnership of any kind, marriage or living together or whatever. Totally unable to find anybody that can live with you, to finding a lifelong spiritual companion. You see, you can have a wowzer overnight, and yet smile at it, rejoice in it, and go back to not making the contact. And so what will happen? You know what will happen. So do I. You'll come back under the law. You'll be a branch that withers and dies, and that which you have can be taken from you. So he says, I wish you could see this point. It's very important to him. The contact must be maintained. That's why I say this chapter should be called not just established. Hang on a minute, I'll find it. Not just establishing your spiritual integrity, but I think it should be establishing and maintaining your spiritual integrity. All right. So, the contact must be maintained. Do not go back to just being a human being again. The mere fact that you may be brought out of your humanhood today and become a spiritual giant, you may yourself be raised from the dead, or you may raise others from the dead. It doesn't say that you will not go back under the law. It is your responsibility. Because there is the mesmerism of the world at every single moment is saying, you're just a human being. You were born. You will die. You were born of woman. You will return to dust. And against that, there must be your activity in your consciousness, an activity of your own consciousness removing you from under the law and keeping you under grace. And when you have come under grace, don't think you can relax. No, no, no. You have achieved nothing but a temporary victory. You will have to maintain, through the activity of truth in your own consciousness, your life under grace. And so it's up to you individually to do this. Therefore, he doesn't say, just practice this 3 times a day. He says 12 times a day, with every discordant picture, and another period where you just make the contact so it can flow for no purpose at all. Okay, so we all see how important that is, and hopefully we're all doing that. And if we're not, and bad things are happening, it's because you're back under the belief in good and evil, which is the law. But you have the power to become the Son of God and live under grace. You've been given it. You've been called. All right, he has not seen too many people on this path tempted by evil. He's seen a lot of them, however, tempted by good, by fame. Oh, look, I can be famous, or by wealth, or by ease, or tempted by, oh, isn't she pretty? Hey, look at him. They're tempted to go off the path in some human way. All right, so you need to watch for that. But if you are making the contact several times a day, then that will be more important than any of these things, and you won't be so tempted. You might be a little tempted still, but you'll be able to brush it off. No, no, this is what I want. Do you see the major point of the work we're doing here? This woman that wrote this letter to him says, it came. It came. Finally, it came. Man was not meant to remain human. Not I declared, or I affirmed, or it was in your books, Joel. No, it came. And there's lesson number one. The very moment that you have touched the spiritual center, it begins to come. And so we talked about that. The word begins to flow, so that you do not expect anymore to heal by declarations, affirmations, or thoughts, or even by what you know. Now you expect only to heal by the word of God which comes to you. And so it came. All right. Now this is important. You should be practicing this. We covered that in former chapters. If you're not, if you've forgotten, go back to it. Because we should be practicing when there's a problem presented. Like someone comes to you and says, I have a stomach ache. Will you pray for me? We should be now able to say what he said for us to say, which is, no answer to that mental image. It's a nothingness. Now, I'm turning within. Father, you speak, and say nothing, but wait for 3 to 4 minutes to make that contact. Okay, now what came to her was man was not meant to remain human. And that means at some point in our experience, we are to give up our human identity for our spiritual identity. That is what is described in Romans. To them who receive the Spirit of God, to them gave he power to become the sons of God. Do you see? And I wrote, by making the contact within, you receive power to die and be transformed. And so we do this dying consciously, don't we? So now he's going to get into that, which he just said when he said, we give up our human identity for our spiritual identity. And that's how we do that, by continually making contact within and no longer living as a human being. So we're consciously dying. We're consciously being transformed. It doesn't happen in one fell swoop. It happens as we practice this. Becomes deeper and deeper and lasts longer and longer until he says in the other chapters, it begins to live you. That's how we're transformed. So the very moment that you make the contact within you, then do you receive the power to make the full demonstration of becoming the Son of God. That is, to enter into your spiritual identity. With this healing, this cat passed from its human existence into its spiritual existence. That's very important. It's very important. Because if you can sit down and meditate and do that for your cat, you can sit down and do that for yourself and then for others. But even if the cat should leave this plane, or even if a person should leave this plane, which it undoubtedly will, even then, it will go right on living its spiritual life because it has been translated. It has made the transition. And so, that's one of the most important lines in this book. So I'll read it again, but I'll put it in first person, or I'll read it speaking to you. If you have made your contact to the point where you are making this transition from a human to this presence living you, then, even if you leave this plane, you will go right on living your spiritual life on the other side because you have been translated. You have made or are making the transition. It's a very important line. All right, once the Christ has sufficiently taken over so that it lives our lives, even though we may succumb to a mesmeric sense of the world in one way or another, even to the extent of passing on, it does not change the fact that inwardly we have now attained our spiritual life, and we will continue to function not as human beings on the next plane, but as spiritual beings or as the Christ. And so that's very important. That's why we are on this path, because we don't want to repeat life and death in the cycle, the wheel of life, and never get out of this humanhood. We need to do this before we leave here. And so we have all been called. It's time to get out of the cycle, the wheel of life. You have been called. I have been called. I am doing this to the best of my ability. Not perfect. Certainly not as well as Joel. And yet I'm doing it the best I can. So, there are those here on earth who have done this, who have passed from human life and are now living their spiritual life on earth. And, of course, he was one. And you will be if you make your contact within and practice many times daily. You will be one too. If you looked at the Master, he says, you would undoubtedly say, if you were looking through human eyes, oh, that's our neighbor, Mary's son. That's the carpenter. But if you were on the level of Peter's consciousness, you would see, this is the Christ, the Son of God. He has already made the transition and is now living a Christ life instead of a human life. And you have those eyes now, don't you? Don't you have the consciousness that Peter had? Sure you do. You would only have to sit for 5 minutes and listen to someone. You would only have to read what they wrote online for 30 seconds, and you would know if they are living as a human or if they've made the transition and are now Christ is living as them. Nobody would have to tell you. You know who it is that's living by these principles, or partly by these principles, or some of the time by these principles, and some of the time a human life. You know. Nobody has to say. It's not a judgment. You're not making a judgment. You just look and you know. So you already have Peter's eyes, don't you? You've already been lifted up above just regular humanhood. There comes a time for us to cease being human beings, to cease living our own lives. It is a point of transition that takes place in consciousness, and you are standing there now. I repeat over and over in this chapter, you have been called, and you're standing there now. You have been told to cease being a human being, to begin the transition, to come home to the living God that made you. In your own consciousness and as your own consciousness. Now, every day that we consciously remove ourselves from under the law and acknowledge ourselves to live under grace, every day that we do that and every hour of the day that we have a conscious realization that we are living on the invisible and by the invisible and not by anything visible, in that degree we are dying daily. And then, what happens one day is we die completely and are reborn in the Spirit. And at that moment, there is no longer a human reaction to life. And that's one of the ways you can know if you're getting close to that, because you're not reacting humanly. You're not reacting with sympathy, with pity, with grief, with anger, with fear, or even with love of anything visible. Now, love may be pouring out of you, but you're looking at the invisible. So, if you are not reacting in a human way, then you are dying, or already died. So life then is lived on an entirely different plane. The reactions are different. The things of the world run off the shoulder. One is not subject to the laws of the world, but only to divine grace. And that's what we're walking toward. You have been called. Transition is an act of consciousness which appears physically. The transformation is something taking place in your consciousness, and it externalizes itself as form. When a spiritual transition takes place, for instance, you might have an appetite for one kind of food today and find tomorrow you can't eat it. Okay, the transformation is something taking place in consciousness, externalizing itself as form. That, of course, is the Word made flesh. And I had this experience, and I've shared it with all of you, where I love sausage biscuits and gravy. And my wife could make them. She came from the South, and she could make the heck out of sausage biscuits and gravy. And I ate them and ate them and ate them. And one day, after a meditation, I walked into the kitchen. What are we having for dinner, honey? We're having sausage biscuits and gravy, one of your favorites. And I smelled them, and it was over. It was over. I haven't been able to eat them since. I can't do it. Well, I mean, maybe a little nibble if there's nothing else to eat. And I may say, what do you have in there, and take a bite, and then, uh-oh. That's what I mean by a little nibble. I might be able to get that down. But I can't sit down and have them on my plate and eat them. I can't even be in the room when they're cooking. I didn't do that. That wasn't anything I consciously thought, well, now for health reasons, I'm not going to eat pork. No, it had nothing to do with that. It was I walked in, I smelled it, that's it. And that's been 16, 17 years ago. Now, if that happens with beef, I'll probably be a fishitarian or a chickenitarian or something. Because when it happens to you, you don't have a choice. It wasn't your choice to begin with. It just drops away. All right. In the same way, you might enjoy certain physical pleasures and pastimes, and in your spiritual elevation, find that you can no longer indulge in them. The whole nature is transformed. It's because we have outgrown that particular state of consciousness. So it is that we, as we do that, these things fall away. Remember that when you first sit down to meditate, he's going to jump back over here, back into meditation. Oh, okay, that's because he said, well, let's have a little meditation now. And now he's coming back to the principle. Remember, when you first sit down to meditate, it is perfectly legitimate, perfectly right, if you make some declarations of truth within yourself, some reminders. And I've said that, and he said that. But as soon as you can, as soon as possible, settle back into that listening attitude, because you know now that your thoughts are never going to heal. It is only when the impulse comes from within, some feeling of peace. This is going to be very tough for you, very tough medicine to take, but this is the truth. And again, you have to keep the declarations very short, such as, no answer to this, now Father you speak, or Thy grace is my sufficiency, or I'm just here to commune, or Father, reveal yourself. Something short, sweet, and to the point. And then, as soon as possible, settle back into listening. And it's going to be very tough. And as he said in the other chapter, you may have to grit your teeth. But by golly, we've got to go through whatever mental uncomfortability that brings to get to the point where we can consciously make the contact. And we've got to be willing to do it, to pass through this initiation. And did you know? If you didn't know, I'm telling you now. You have been called. You are in an initiation. You don't think that just anybody gets in this door, do you? You have been called by your own Christ consciousness, and you are being initiated. And so this is one of the initiations. And if it's uncomfortable, so what? Pass through it. So, he says, don't be too concerned about those who pass on, or who can't be saved, or those whose desire is to live only in matter. That's living death, the walking dead. But it amounts to nothing to see them go on, because whatever opportunity they're going to have for spiritual unfoldment, they will also have in the next experience. All right? So he's covering two things here at the end of this chapter, and one is that the way to meditate, which we just went over, is to make a declaration. Maybe you don't. Maybe you're beyond where you don't even need that. Maybe you can just turn within now and say, Father, with the attitude of go ahead, I'm listening. Not with the words, with the attitude. But maybe it's still necessary to say the words. This is a mental image. I can't do anything about it. Father, you speak. It doesn't matter. Just as soon as you can, bring yourself to a listening attitude. Because we know now, nothing we think can heal. Nothing we think can reveal God. Only God itself can impart itself as we listen. And then the other point he's making is, don't worry about people that go on ahead and they look like they're stuck in material living, they'll have the same opportunity over here, over there, that we have had over here. Okay? Whatever opportunity they're going to have for spiritual unfoldment, they will also have in the next experience. So, we are making consciously this transition. Right now, today, we're making the transition of man of earth to son of God. And all of you, well, we're in this together, and yet we're alone. We're in this together because we are all moving through these principles and these chapters together, and yet we are alone because this is an internal experience, that an internal initiation to which we've been called, which we have no choice now, and we each need to pass through it alone. But I guarantee you, what he said is true. When you pass through this initiation, and you're at the place where you can turn within and make the contact, you will never, ever forget that one or those few who helped you across. Never will you not have gratitude for them. Your love will be boundless. But by then it won't be your love anyway. It'll be the Christ love. Okay, I hope that's helpful. I hope that, well, that brings to a close chapter 29. And I think, let me look at this. Yes, chapter 30 is very, very wonderful. Very deep. I can hardly wait to get into it. But we have to take another week. That'll give me a little more time to go within and say, Father, what do you have to say? All right. God bless you. Make the contact, and I, within, will be right there with you. Good night.